Nights tuned to yesterday, delivering shows from radio's golden years. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Great stories in this hour, with science fiction from X-1 later on, and right now, a tale from Ray Bradbury on NBC's short story program. This episode called The Rocket, from January 4th, 1952.
Now, it's time for short story and Ray Bradbury's exciting drama, The Rocket. But first, let me take a moment to bring you some news about Saturday's top shows on NBC. Tomorrow evening, the Camel Caravan joins NBC. Enjoy a full 30 minutes of sparkling music as provided by Vaughn Monroe, the Moon Maids, the Moon Men, and lovely Shay Cogan. This Saturday, tomorrow, on the premier broadcast, the Camel Caravan will salute the University of Connecticut. Make a program note to hear the Camel Caravan tomorrow night. Now, it's short story on NBC. NBC presents Short Story. Tonight, The Rocket by Ray Bradbury. Stories in the field of science fiction are usually associated in the public's mind with wildly fantastic juvenile adventures. Yet one of today's most promising young writers has seen fit to concentrate almost exclusively on science fiction material. He is Ray Bradbury, and his sensitive, moving stories have a universal appeal which stamps them as truly great. Listen now to a story of the future, Ray Bradbury's The Rocket.
Rocket spattered the concrete launching apron somewhere west of Kansas City. It climbed a fiery ladder and arched eastward over the sleeping land. Lovers looked upward and traced its path with drowsy fingers. The learned astronomers swore academic curses as the brilliant wake-fogged camera plates at Mount Wilson and Palomar and Harvard Observatory. The radar tracking units put their electronic heads together and came to the mathematical conclusion that Flight R-23 was on course at constant acceleration and would reach the orbit of Mars at its scheduled time. The 9 o'clock rocket was on its way.
Fiorello, what are you doing up?
Nothing. Go to sleep.
What are you doing in your bare feet on the cold floor?
Nothing.
Come back to bed.
Later.
Later? 6 o'clock in the morning, you go to work at the junkyard. Don't be a fool. Come back to bed.
It woke me up.
What, the rocket? Well, there should be a law. All night, the rockets.
I'm going for a walk.
Now? 3 o'clock in the morning?
Leave me alone, Maria.
Oh, you're crazy. I know all the time. You think I'm asleep. You walk down by the river to that crazy Bramante who lives in the shack.
Please. Please don't spoil anything.
Spoil? I forbid it. By the right of a wife, I forbid it. Fiorello Bodoni, you come back to your bed.
Later. I'll be back later. Go to sleep, Maria.
I forbid it. I forbid it. At least take your overcoat.
To Mars, to Venus.
Well, well, Bodoni.
Good evening, Bramante.
It is. Sit down.
The air is clear.
You come out for the air?
Small house smells of old food.
Only for the air?
Only the air.
I prefer the rockets myself. I was a boy when they started. I went to New Mexico to see the takeoff of the first one to the moon.
What was it like, the first rocket? Did it take off like these? Did it fly through the night on a fountain of fire?
I never saw it. A million other fools came for the same thing. I saw the pictures after. 65 years ago. And I've never ridden on one yet.
I'll ride up in one someday.
That fool, you'll never go. This is a rich man's world. Do we fly rockets? No. We live in shacks by the river like our ancestors before us.
Perhaps my sons.
No, nor their sons. It's the rich who have dreams and rockets. Who rides in that rocket? Bramante the laborer, Bodoni the junk man?
Ah. Old man, I've saved $3,000. It took me 6 years to save it for my business, to invest in machinery. But every night for a month now...
You watch the rockets.
I hear them. I think. Tonight I've made up my mind. One of us will fly to Mars.
Oh, idiot. How will you choose? Who will go? If you go, your wife will hate you. For you will be just a bit nearer God in space. I can see the bitterness gnaw.
No, not Maria.
And your children. Will their lives be filled with the memory of Papa who flew to Mars while they stayed here? They'll think of the rocket the rest of their lives, and they will be sick with wanting it, just as you are sick now. They'll want to die if they can't go.
I'm sick now.
Don't show them a goal in the stars, Bodoni. Turn their eyes down to their hands and to your junkyard, not up to the stars.
But
suppose your wife went. How would you feel, knowing she had seen and you had not? No, Bodoni. Buy a new wrecking machine, which you need, and pull your dreams apart with it and smash them to pieces. Listen to me, Bodoni.
There in the west. Look at it, Bramante, climbing fire to the stars.
You haven't listened to me. Well, it gets cold.
Good night, Bramante.
Sleep well, Bodoni.
Fiorello Bodoni stood half naked in darkness, watching the streaks of fire curve upward into the eternal night. And then he looked down. But the river before him reflected the flaming images of the rockets as they tore away from Earth. And there was no peace.
Fiorello?
It's all right.
Are you cold?
No, you should have slept.
I can get some hot milk.
I don't need it. Maria, I have $3,000.
Oh, in the morning.
No, now. I have enough to take one of us on the Mars rocket.
In the morning.
Monty says I should invest it in the business. Forget the rocket.
Fiorello, in the morning.
Think what you'd see. The meteors like fish, the universe, the moon.
What are you talking about, Fiorello?
You'd see the Earth in the sky, Maria.
I would?
I only have money for one of us.
If someone is to go, it will be you. Now go to sleep.
No, someone should go who could tell it well on returning. You have a way with words.
So have you.
Maria, it should be you.
Oh, in the morning, Fiorello. In the morning.
Hey, Papa. Papa, I saw the Venus rocket this morning.
Boy, oh boy.
Oh, that isn't the way the rocket goes. It goes zoom.
Children,
zoom.
Listen, all of you. I have enough money to take one of us on the Mars rocket.
Wait.
Only one of us, you understand? Who?
Me, Papa.
Please,
no, listen, consider. Only one can go for the whole family. Consider who should it be.
Papa, maybe Antonello.
Mary Omni. She's the girl.
You, Fiorello, you.
Here, Paolo, give me the broom.
The broom?
Here, now. I have straws here, all long but one. The short straw wins. Understand? We'll choose. Paolo, choose.
Yes, Papa.
What is it?
Long straw.
Antonello?
Long straw, Papa.
All right, two straws left. You, Maria.
Oh, no.
Draw a straw.
I don't want to.
Draw.
Short straw.
Well, Mama goes to Mars.
Yay, Mama goes to Mars.
Congratulations, I'll buy you a ticket today.
Congratulations, Mama.
You'll tell us all about Mars?
I'm glad it was you, Mama. Honest I am.
I cannot go to Mars.
Why not?
I will be busy with another child.
What?
It wouldn't do for me to travel in my condition.
Is this the truth? Maria, is this true?
Yes, it's true. Draw again. Start over.
Why didn't you tell me this before?
We're talking about the rocket so much.
Maria.
Who goes, Papa?
Draw again. First, Paolo.
Papa, short straw. Papa, short straw. I go to Mars.
That's swell.
I go to Mars, Papa. I can go, can't I?
Yes.
And you'll like me when I get back?
Of course.
Antonello, will you like me when I get back from Mars?
Sure, I guess.
Oh, Papa, I forgot. School starts. I can't go. Draw again.
I couldn't go either, Papa. I'm awfully busy.
I am too, Papa.
None of us can go, Papa, not alone. We wouldn't like each other after. No, none of us will go.
That's best.
Ramonte was right. Invest in junk.
Oh, never mind, Fiorello. Go on, eat your egg. You don't like it when it's cold.
Bodoni!
Huh?
Bodoni! Turn that thing off!
Huh?
Turn off the machine!
What do you want, Mr. Matthews?
I got some metal for you.
Big?
Plenty big.
What good'll it do me? My machinery is falling apart. 20 years old.
Now, quit kicking at something good.
What is it?
A rocket ship.
No.
What's the matter? Don't you want it?
Yes. Yes, I want it.
It's a mock-up, you know. When they plan a rocket, they build a full-scale model of aluminum. No engines. You might make a little profit boiling it down for the aluminum. I'll let you have it for $2,000.
I haven't got the money.
No? Oh, sorry. I thought I could help you. You said everybody outbids you on junk. I figured I could slip this to you on the QT. Well...
I need new equipment. I save money for that.
Oh, sure, sure, I understand.
Even if I bought your rocket, I wouldn't be able to melt it down. My aluminum furnace broke down last week.
Sure. Well, I'll see you.
I couldn't possibly use a rocket if I bought it from you.
Okay, okay, sure.
But I'm a great fool. I'll take my money from the bank and give it to you.
If you can't melt it down...
Deliver it.
All right, if you say so. Tonight?
Tonight. Tonight would be fine. Yes, I'd like to have a rocket ship tonight.
Slack off. Oh. All right, set her down. Look out, look out. Easy, easy. Oh. All right, get the chains off her. Okay, Bodoni, you got a rocket ship.
There was a moon. The rocket was white and big in the junkyard. It held the whiteness of the moon and the blueness of the stars.
You're all mine. Even if you never move or spit fire and just sit there and rust for 50 years, you're mine.
The rocket smelled of time and distance. It was like walking into a clock. It was finished with Swiss delicacy. He crawled through the airlock and walked through the quiet of the passageway. The dome of the control room looked out over the river. The stars were overhead and the moon... He sat in the pilot seat and touched a lever. The silence beat into his ears. His eyes were closed, and in his mind a hum began. Louder, 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 higher, wilder, stronger, trembling in him, leaning him forward and pulling him and the ship in roaring silence and in a kind of metal screaming, while his fists flew over the controls and his shut eyes quivered, and the sound grew and grew until it was a fire, a strength, a lifting and a pushing of power that threatened to tear him in half. He gasped. The hum was louder in his brain. On and on and on, his eyes tighter, his heart furious.
Taking off. Taking off.
A jolting concussion pounded in his brain, a thunder of power that was silenced to the ear. His eyes tight shut, he saw the flash of fiery rain in the sky.
The meteors! The meteors!
It was a silent rush, a still acceleration, a speed of the mind in the volcanic light of the sun. And with eyes tight, blind, seeing through the mind, he sped on to the great red disk hanging in a black velvet sky.
Mars! Mars! I see it! Mars!
Fell back, exhausted. His shaking hands came loose of the controls and his head tilted back wildly. He sat for a long time, breathing out and in, his heart slowing. Slowly, slowly, he opened his eyes. The junkyard was still there. He sat motionless. He looked at the heaped piles of rusting metal.
Take off. Take off. Take off. I'll show you. I'll show you. Frog. Frog squatting in the junkyard. I'll show you. I'll show you. If you don't fly, you won't. I'll show you. Now I'll show you. You'll feel it when the wrecking weights hit you. You'll listen to me when I smash you. This is my wrecking machine. I'm Fear of Odoni, and I'm going to crack you, smash you up now, now, now!
The silver rocket lay in the light of the moon. The long, slim shape poised in the piles of rusting junk seemed to be moving. The stubby fins seemed swept back by the winds, and the hull seemed crouched for the leap into the skies. Bodoni's hand was on the lever that would send the massive weights of his terrible wrecking machine plunging into the thin aluminum hull, cracking, ripping apart this insolent dream, this silly thing for which he had paid his money and which would not move. But his hand stayed. Beyond the rocket a block away stood the yellow lights of his house burning warmly. He stepped down from the wrecking machine and went home. And when he came in the front door, he was laughing.
Maria, Maria,
oh,
Maria.
Fiorello, the children are in bed.
Then wake them and start packing. We're going to Mars.
Fiorello.
We're going to Mars.
You took our money for this?
We're going to Mars.
It will never fly.
It will fly. Children, children.
Papa, is it real? Is it real?
Yes, it's real.
Can I touch it?
Later. Now go to the house, all of you. I have work to do. Tomorrow we leave. Tell no one. Tomorrow we leave. Tell no one. Understand? It's a secret.
Yippee!
Oh, you have ruined us. Our money used for this. This thing.
Please, Maria, you'll see.
Never. Fiorello Bodoni, you are a madman. Goodbye.
Where are you going?
To the house. Someone has to take care of your children.
God help me.
Through the midnight hours, trucks arrived, packages were delivered, and Bodoni, smiling, exhausted his bank account.
Hey, Mac, want to check this bill of lading? Rations, United Space Commissary, type 34-7, 10 cartons. Space precautionary repair clothing, one set, including a 34 glassine helmet, breather hose assembly, type 867, shoulder coupling assembly, rubber steel welded.
When the dawn light turned the dark, twisted shadows into piles of old plumbing fixtures and auto chassis, the sputter of Fiorello Bodoni's welding equipment crackled through the yard. A pile of crates stood by the rocket, the wood fresh, the stenciled writing spelling out in authorized standard abbreviations, the roadway to the stars.
Gee, look at that, Tony. Space rations. Guaranteed 7 acceleration rigging.
What's acceleration rigging?
Well, that's so you can take off without being mashed flat.
We're really going. Gee.
You kids, Paolo and Antonello.
Hi, Papa.
You kids, get away from the rocket.
We weren't touching anything.
You've got to be careful with rockets. High tension.
Sure, Papa. We thought maybe we could help.
Don't you worry. Your Papa's gonna take care of everything.
Through the night, the giant arcs brought a lifeless day to the junkyard. The cold blue light was hard. The flash of sparks from the welding machine spurted out like a run of meteors hitting an atmosphere and flaring into nothingness. With welding torch, riveter, and soldering iron, Fiorello Bodoni assaulted the rocket, added, took away, worked fiery magics and secret insults upon it. He bolted 9 ancient automobile motors into the rocket's empty engine room. Then he welded the engine room shut so that none could see his hidden labor. And at morning, he came back to the house.
Maria, I'm ready for breakfast. No word for your husband? Never mind. I'm not hungry. I have more work to do.
The optical equipment was delivered, nested in foam rubber, spring-mounted against the tremor of a sharp-turned street corner, or the smashing jar of a planetfall. The electric wiring snaked through the shining corridors of the rocket like the thin white branching nerve from brain to spinal cord to muscle. And then the yard was still. The hammer was laid down. The pile of fresh wood crates was gone. The rocket leaned forward, jutting above the mounds of rusting bedsprings and countless empty beer cans. At sunset, Fiorella Bodoni came into his house and called to the children.
Paolo, Antonello, Miriamne. Children.
They will not answer.
Why not?
I've locked them in the closet.
What do you mean?
You'll be killed in that rocket.
Listen to me, Maria.
It will blow up. Anyway, you're no pilot.
I can fly this ship. I've fixed
it. You have gone mad.
Where's the key to the closet?
They will not go. Kill yourself. Leave me my children.
Where's the key?
I have it here.
Give it to me.
Oh, no.
Give it to me.
Leave the baby. Leave me the little girl.
No, all must go. Give me the key.
Oh, here. You will kill them.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes, you will. I feel it.
You won't come along.
I will stay here.
You'll understand. You'll see then. Children, come out. Come, follow your father. We'll go to Mars. Come.
Goodbye, Mama. Goodbye, Mama.
Goodbye. Goodbye, Maria. You'll see.
Murderer.
Children, before we go inside, listen carefully. We'll be gone a week. You must get back to school and I to my business. Listen. This rocket is very old and will fly only one more journey. It will not fly again. This will be the one trip of your life. Keep your eyes open wide.
Yes, Papa.
All right, we'll go inside. I'll lift you, Miriamne. Stand clear. I'll close the airlock. We're ready now, children. We're going to Mars. Listen. Keep your ears clean. Smell the smells of a rocket. Feel. Remember, so when you return, you'll talk of it all the rest of your lives. Do you understand, Paolo?
Yes, Papa.
Antonello?
Yes, Papa.
Miriamne?
Yes, Papa.
You mustn't loosen the straps or the rubber hammocks. Ready?
Ready.
Then I'll throw the switches. Now we take off for Mars.
The children, strapped like tiny mummies in the rubber hammocks, screamed as the rocket thundered and leapt. They danced in the webbing, shouting and pointing 100 ways at once. And then in the port above them, a silver circle floated by, pockmarked with craters, the edge etched sharp against the velvet black.
The moon! That's the moon!
Look well, children. Remember.
The moon dreamed by, the black of space broken by the fierce pinpoints of the stars swarmed around them. And then a flight of fire, a shower of bright flame across the ports.
Meteors! Those are meteors, aren't they, Papa? Aren't they?
Those are meteors. Remember. Remember.
The hours enveloped them. Time flowed away in a serpentine of gas. The children shouted, their eyes wide, their ears filled with the roar.
What's that?
The earth. The whole of earth. Remember it, my little daughter. Remember how the ground you'll walk the rest of your life looks from where God sits.
The rocket dropped pink petals of fire while the hour dial spun. The child eyes dropped shut. At last, they hung like drunken moths in their cocoon hammocks.
Paolo. Antonello. Riamni. Good.
He tiptoed from the control room, down the shining corridors where the handhold stood out from the cold walls. And then, before the airlock, he stood a long time, fearful Hesitating, he pressed a button. The airlock door swung open. The door that leads to space, into inky tides of meteor and gaseous torch, into swift mileages and infinite dimensions. Fiorello Bodoni smiled and stepped out. He stood outside the door, and all around the quivering rocket lay the junkyard. Rusting, unchanged, there stood the padlocked junkyard gate, the little silent house by the river, the kitchen window lighted. And in the center of the junkyard, manufacturing a magic dream, lay the quivering, purring rocket, shaking and roaring, bouncing the netted children like flies in a web.
Maria, Maria.
Fiorello.
It goes well. I must get back now. God, God, let nothing happen for 6 days. Let nothing happened to the illusion. Let all of space come and go and red Mars come up under our ship and the moons of Mars. Let there be no flaw in the color film. Let there be three dimensions. Let nothing go wrong with the mirrors and screens that mold the fine illusion. Let time pass. God, let us make our trip to Mars.
When the children awoke, red Mars floated near the rocket. Bodoni looked and saw red Mars, and it was good, and there was no flaw in it, and he was very happy. At sunset on the seventh day, Fiorello Bodoni sat before the giant panel and threw 10 switches, and the rocket stilled.
All right, children, we're home.
Sit down. I have ham and eggs for all of you.
Mama, you should have seen it.
Mars, Mama, and the meteors.
And the moon, Mama. You should have seen the moon.
Oh, yes. Now eat, all of you. The eggs are hot.
Papa, we want to thank you.
It was nothing.
We'll remember it for always, Papa. We saw the moon and the meteors. We rode on a rocket to Mars. We'll never forget.
Oh, eat now. The eggs will get cold. Fiorello, are you awake?
Yes.
You're the best father in the world.
Why?
Now I see. Now I understand. Is it a very lovely journey?
Yes.
To Mars?
To Mars.
Fiorello?
Yes?
Maybe some night, you might take me on just a little trip. Do you think?
Just a little one, maybe.
Oh, thank you. Good night.
Good night.
You have heard The Rocket by Ray Bradbury. Our radio adaptation was by Ernest Kenoy. In tonight's cast, the narrator was Stanley Waxman, Maria Margaret Brayton, Bodoni Don Diamond, Bramante Ralph Moody, Paolo Joel Nessler, Antonello David Duval, Miriamne Dorothy Brown, Matthews Kurt Martell, your announcer John Wald. The director of NBC Presents Short Story is Andrew C. Love. Be with us again at the same time next week for our production of James Cain's short story, Dead Man. This program came to you from Hollywood. Tomorrow, Vaughn Monroe joins the other great Saturday shows on NBC.
Short Story, on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC episode from January 4th, 1952. You're listening to an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now the second of two stories that celebrated sci-fi author William Ten contributed to the X-1 series, a story that first premiered in Galaxy magazine in 1955 called The Discovery of Morneal Mathaway. This episode first broadcast on NBC on April 17, 1957.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X minus one.
Tonight, The Discovery of Morneal Mathaway by William Ten.
Everyone is astonished at the change in Morneal Mathaway since he was discovered. Everyone, that is, but me. They remember him as an unbathed and untalented Greenwich Village painter who began almost every second sentence with I, and ended every third one with me. You see, I understand the change in him, because I was there the day he was discovered. We were talking about his discovery that day. I was sitting carefully balanced on the one wooden chair in his cold little Bleecker Street studio, because I was too sophisticated to sit in the easy chair.
Come on, Dave, take a comfortable seat.
Oh, no, Morneal, oh, no, I know about that chair.
Now, what do you mean? It's the only comfortable chair in the room.
Yeah, I know, look at it. Broken down spring, very high in the front and low in the back.
Sure, it conforms with the position of the spine.
Yeah, sure. And when you sit in it, things begin sliding out of your pockets. Loose change, keys, wallets, anything. What do you do, Morneal? Pay the rent on your studio with that easy chair?
Well, as a matter of fact, it is rather profitable.
Mm. And that's why I'll sit on the wooden chair, if you don't mind.
Oh, now, don't be bourgeois.
Well, I notice you always sit on the bed.
That's because I'm a good host.
I see. Well, how's the painting going?
Oh, great, great, fabulous.
You sell any paintings?
No. You know, Dave, I can't wait for the day when some dealer, some critic with an ounce of brain sees my work. I can't miss, Dave. I know I can't miss. I'm just too good. Sometimes I get frightened at how good I am. Why, it's almost too much talent for one man.
Well, there's always...
Not that it's too much talent for me. I'm big enough to carry it, fortunately. I'm large enough of soul.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear it. Now, if you don't mind...
You know what I was thinking about this morning?
No, but to tell you the truth,
I was thinking about Picasso, Dave. Picasso and Rouen. I'd just gone for a walk through the pushcart area to have my breakfast. You know, the old hand's quicker than the eyes.
Yes, I know. I've seen you do it. You're the only man I know who can ask directions to Houston Street and fill his pockets full of bananas at the same time.
Oh, well, society owes the artist something.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I started to think about the art of modern painting. I think about that a lot, Dave. It troubles me.
You do, huh? Well,
was thinking, who is really doing important work in painting today? Who is really an unquestionable great? I could think of only three names. Picasso, Rouault, and me.
Well, naturally.
Just three names, no more. Oh, it made me feel very lonely, Dave.
Yes, well, I can see that. But
and then I asked myself, why is this so? Has absolute genius always been so rare? Why has my impending discovery been delayed so long? Oh, I thought about it for a long time, Dave. I thought about it humbly, carefully, because it's an important question, and this is the answer I came up with.
Don't bother waiting for the answer that Morneal came up with. It turned out to be a theory of aesthetics I'd heard at least a dozen times before from a dozen other painters in the village. Morneal was a bad painter, there was no question about it. I say that not only for my opinion. I've roomed with two modern painters and I've been married for a year to another, but... Well, for example, a friend of mine, a fine critic of modern art, took a look at one of Morneel's paintings, which he hung over my fireplace in spite of my protests, and just kind of stared slack-jawed.
What does he call that technique?
Well, he says it's smudge on smudge.
Well, I can believe it. Smudge on smudge, white on white. Non-objectivism, neo-abstractionism, call it what you like. There's nothing there, nothing. Well, it doesn't even have the interest of those paintings that chimpanzee did a couple of years ago. He's just another of those loudmouth, frowsy, frustrated dilettantes that infest the village. Why do you waste your time with him?
Well, for one thing, he lives right around the corner, and he's kind of colorful in his own sick way. And he does have one great talent.
It's not in painting.
No, no. Now, you see, I just get by as far as living expenses are concerned. Things like good paper to write on, good books for my library, I can't touch them. And sometimes the yearning gets too great. You know, a newly published collection by Wallace Stevens. Well, if I find one I want, I just go over to Morneel's and tell him about it.
He doesn't lend you money.
Oh, no. Now, you see, we go out to the bookstore and we come in separately. And then I start a conversation with the proprietor about some very expensive out-of-print item I'm thinking of ordering, and Morneel just says, "Don't mind me, I'm browsing." Well, that's the high side. I'm browsing.
Well, what happens?
Well, while I'm keeping the proprietor talking, Morneel snaffles the Stevens.
Isn't that just a little bit,
Oh, well, I intend to pay for them, of course, just as soon as I'm a little ahead.
Well, why does he do this for you?
Oh, well, I pay off. I go through the same routine at an art supply store so Morneel can get canvas and paint and brushes. Of course, I really have to pay for Morneel's browsing. I have to suffer through listening to him, and then my conscience bothers me.
Oh, it does.
Yes, you see, I intend to pay for my things, but I know he doesn't. And that's why my conscience bothers me. Well, here he was the day he was discovered, sitting in his room, and Morneel was running on about his own genius.
Now, I can't be as unique as I feel. Other people must be born with a potential of such great talent, but it's destroyed in them before they can reach artistic maturity. Why? How? Well, let's examine the role that society plays in all of this.
What's that? You got a hi-fi set?
Nonsense. That's a crass materialistic concept that I should...
Something is happening. Hey, when did you put the purple lights in?
Purple? Oh, what's that?
Look, it's shimmering. It's coming right through the wall. It looks like a box.
We can't both be having an artistic vision. You're not the type.
No, I'm not, and I'm not drunk either. Look out, something's going to happen.
Morneel Mathaway?
Who are you? Where'd you come from?
You are Morneel Mathaway?
Yes.
My name is Glescu. I bring you greetings from 2487 A.D.
Oh, 2487 A.D.?
I realize this is a difficult phenomenon for you to grasp entirely, but here I am. We will now indulge in the 20th century custom of shaking hands. Mr. Morneel Mathaway?
Oh, well, sure. Shake, yeah.
And you, sir?
Yeah, sure. I don't mind. Shake.
What a moment. What a supreme moment.
Oh, well, what do you mean, what a moment? What's so special about it? Are you the inventor of time travel?
Me, an inventor? No. Time travel was invented by Antoinette Ingeborg in... Well, that was after your time. It's hardly worth going into at the moment, especially since I only have half an hour.
Why half an hour?
The skin drum can only be maintained that long. The skin drum is... Well, call it the transmitting device that enables me to appear in your period. There is such an enormous expenditure of power required that a trip into the past is made only every 50 years. The privilege is awarded as a sort of go-bell. I believe I have the word right. It is go-bell, isn't it? The award made in your time?
Well, you wouldn't mean Nobel by any chance. A Nobel Prize?
That's it! The Nobel Prize. A trip is awarded to outstanding scholars as a kind of Nobel Prize. Once every 50 years, the man selected by the Gardamax is the most preeminent, that sort of thing, you know. Up to now, of course, it's always gone to historians, or they frittered it away on the Siege of Troy, and the first atom bomb explosion at Los Alamos, or the discovery of America, things like that. But this year...
Yes? Well, what kind of scholar are you?
I am an art scholar. My specialty is art history, and my special field in art history is...
What?
You... Mr. Mathaway, in my own period, I may say without much contradiction, I am the greatest living authority on the life and works of Morneel Mathaway. My special field is you.
Dave, did you hear that? Dave!
I heard.
Do you mean that I'm famous? That famous?
Famous. You, my dear sir, are beyond fame. You are one of the immortals the human race has produced.
That famous?
That famous. Who is the man with whom modern painting in its full glory is said to have definitely begun? Who is the man whose designs and color have dominated architecture for the past five centuries? Who is responsible for the arrangement of our cities, the shape of our artifacts, the texture of our clothing?
Me.
You. No other man in the history of art has exerted such a massive influence over design. To whom can I compare you, sir? To what other artist in history can I possibly compare you?
Rembrandt? Da Vinci?
Rembrandt and Da Vinci in the same breath as you. That's ridiculous. They lacked your universality, your taste for the cosmic.
Wow.
Mr. Glasgow, excuse me. Do you happen to know of a poet named David Danziger? Did much of his work survive?
Is that you?
Yes, that's me. Dave Danziger?
Well, no. I don't think so. The only poet I can remember for this time and this part of the world is Peter Tebb.
Tebb? Never heard of him.
Then this must have been before he was discovered. But you see, I am an art scholar. Well, you see, checking my chronometer, I see my time is getting short. But it is an overwhelming delight for me to be standing in your studio, Mr. Mathaway, and looking at you at last in the flesh. I wonder if you would mind obliging me with a small favor.
Oh, sure. You name it. Nothing's too good for you. What do you want?
I wonder, I'm sure you don't mind, could you possibly let me look at your painting, the one that you're working on at this very moment?
Well, sure. I have one right over here. Just, I'll pull the easel around. There you are. I intend to call this Figured Figurines number 29.
Hmm? Oh, but this...
What's the matter?
Well, surely this isn't your work, Mr. Mathaway?
Yeah. It's my work, all right. Figured Figurines number 29. Recognize it?
No, I do not recognize it, and that is a fact for which I am extremely grateful. Could I see something else, please? Something a little later.
Well, that's the latest. Everything else is earlier. Here, you might like this. Now, I call this Figured Figurines number 22. I think it's the best of my early period.
Oh dear. You know, well, this looks like a smears of paint on top of other smears of paint.
Right. Only I call it smudge on smudge. But you probably know all about that, being such an authority on me. And now, here we have Figured Figurines number 12.
Do you mind leaving these figurines, Mr. Mathaway? I'd like to see something of yours with color and form.
Well, I haven't done any real color work for a long time. Oh, wait a minute. Wait. I have one over here somewhere, an old canvas. I was going to paint over it. Here we are. This is one of the few examples of my mauve and mottled period that I've kept.
Oh, right. I can't imagine why. It's positively, it's... Oh, dear.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Let me show you some of my intestinal period. Ah, here. Here's a particularly good one. It's called Large Intestine Rampant. You like it?
Please. I think I'd like to sit down.
Well, take the comfortable chair. And here's another one called Small Intestine Incisive. Oh, it's rather good, don't you think? I managed to avoid completely any definite line. You notice that?
I don't suppose you have a drink of Glafax. Oh, no, of course you don't. It hasn't been invented yet.
Now here's one that's bound to be great. It's one of my earlier smudge on smudges. It's called Fly Ash. Mm. I painted it by coating the canvas with slow-setting glue and leaving it out on the window for about 2.5 hours. Notice the delicate deposit of soot.
Oh, please. Please, Mr. Mathaway, please.
Oh, I've got lots more.
I don't understand this. All these canvases, this is obviously before you discover yourself and your true technique. But I'm looking for a sign, a hint to the genius that is to come, and I find...
Well, how about this one? Here.
Oh, please. Oh, take that away. Oh, dear. Oh, dear, no. Look, I'll have to leave soon. I don't understand this at all. Let me show you something here, gentlemen. Here, a pocket edition of the source book.
The complete paintings of Morneal Mathaway, 1928-1996. Were you born in 1928?
Yep. May 23rd, 1928.
Here, look at the first painting.
Well, that's beautiful. I mean, the color, that's incredible.
Oh, well, that stuff... Well, why didn't you tell me you wanted that kind of stuff?
You mean you have paintings like this, too?
No, not paintings. One painting. Oh, I did it last week as a sort of an experiment, but I wasn't satisfied with the way it turned out, so I gave it to the girl downstairs. Would you like to look at it?
Oh, yes, very much. very much.
Well, here, I'll just toss your book on the bed. Come on, it won't take a minute or two. Oh, she isn't at home. I thought she'd be home now. Oh, I did so want you to see that painting.
I want to see it. I want to see anything that looks like your mature work. But time is getting short. The chronometer...
I'll tell you what. Anita here has a couple of cats that she asked me to feed when she's away for a while. So she's given me the key to her apartment. Suppose I, browse upstairs and get it.
But she...
Suppose I browse through my room and get it. Get it?
Oh, yeah. You go ahead and browse, sure.
Fine, but please hurry.
Oh, sure, I'll hurry. I won't take long browsing.
Well, that was it, the high sign. I'd seen Morneal Mathaway in action too many times as a shoplifter not to understand it. He was going upstairs to lift that book that he'd dropped on the bed. I knew he hadn't ever painted a picture like the one in the book, but he would now. Only he wouldn't paint them. He copied them. Well, I started talking automatically. You paint yourself, Mr. Glasgow?
No. Of course, I wanted to be an artist when I was a boy. I imagine every critic starts out that way, but I found it far easier to write about paintings than to do them. Once I began reading The Life of Morneal Mathaway, I knew I had found my field. Not only do I empathize closely with his paintings, but he seems so much like a person I could have known and liked. That's one of the things that puzzles me. He's quite different from what I had imagined.
Yes, I'll bet he is.
Of course, history has a way of adding romance to an important figure.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear, I'm running out of time here. Do you think you'll be back with the key soon? I've practically no time left. I've just got to get upstairs to the time translator. I just can't wait. I'll have to hurry now. Oh, dear, I did want to see an original Mathaway. I did want to. Mr. Mathaway, I... Oh!
What's the matter?
The time translator, it isn't here. It's gone.
The book is gone, too.
And Mathaway, he stranded me here. He must have figured out that getting inside and closing the door made it return.
Yeah, he's a great figure. And he'll probably figure out a very plausible story to tell the people in your time to explain how the whole thing happened. Why should he work his head off in the 20th century when he can be an outstanding hero-worship celebrity in the 25th?
So what'll happen if they ask him to paint merely one picture?
Oh, he'll probably tell them he's already done his work and feels he can no longer add anything of importance to it. He'll no doubt end up giving lectures on himself. Don't worry. He'll make out. It's you I'm worried about. You're stuck here, aren't you? Are they likely to send a rescue party after you?
No. Every scholar who wins the award has to sign a waiver of responsibility in case he doesn't return. No, I'm stuck here. Tell me, is it very bad living in this period?
Well, not so bad. Of course, you need a social security card. I don't know how you go about getting one at your age, and... Well, the immigration authorities may want to question you since you're sort of an illegal alien.
Oh, dear, that's awful.
Wait a minute. It needn't be. I'll tell you what. Morneal has a social security card. He had a job a couple of years ago. He keeps his birth certificate in that drawer along with his other papers. Now, why don't you just assume his identity? He'll never show you up as an imposter.
So do you think I could? Won't I be... won't his friends, his relatives...
No, he hasn't got any family, and I'm about the only friend he's got. You could get away with it. Maybe grow a beard and dye it blonde. Naturally, the big problem would be earning a living. Being a specialist on Mathaway and the art movements derived from him wouldn't get you set an awful lot right now.
But I could paint. I've always dreamed of being an artist. I don't have much talent, but there are all kinds of artistic novelties I know about, all kinds of graphic innovations that don't exist in your time. Surely that would be enough, even without talent, to make a living for me on some third or fourth-rate level.
It certainly was, but not on a third or fourth rate level. Mr. Glasgow, that is Morneal Mathaway, is the finest painter alive today and the unhappiest. After his last wildly successful exhibition, I remember he said to me,
"What's the matter with all these people praising me like that? I don't have an ounce of real talent in me. All my work is completely derivative. I've tried to do something, anything that was completely my own, but I'm so steeped in Mathaway that I can't seem to make my own personality come through. And those idiotic critics go on raving about me, and the work isn't even my own."
"Well, then whose is it?"
"Mathaway's, of course. We thought there couldn't be a time paradox. I wish you could read all the scientific papers on the subject. They fill whole libraries because it isn't possible, the time specialists argue, for a painting to be copied from a future reproduction and so have no original artist. But that's what I'm doing. I'm copying from that book by memory.
Look, Blescu, that is Mathaway, don't knock yourself out.
But it's dishonest.
No, it isn't. You're deliberately trying not to copy those paintings. You're working so hard at it that you refuse to think about that book or even discuss it. As a matter of fact, when I tried to get you to talk about it a little while ago, you couldn't actually remember it.
That's true. That's true.
You're the real Morneau Mathaway, and there's no paradox. You're actually painting those pictures. You're not copying them from memory.
I know in my heart that they're not mine.
All right, I'll forget it. Anyway, you're a much nicer guy than Mathaway ever was. And besides, a buck is a buck.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine. The Discovery of Morneau Mathaway, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by William Tenn and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. Featured in our cast were Leon Janney as Mathaway, Guy Repp as the critic, Wendell Holmes as Glescu, and Les Damon as Dave. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
X-1, on Tuned 2 yesterday from April 17, 1957 on NBC. Bringing to a close this hour of science fiction on Tuned 2 yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.